third base coach of the San Francisco Giants, Ron Wotus. Well, how are you?
Good afternoon, Marty. I'm doing well, just like, you know, everybody today, just hunkered down here at the house, and it's great to be with you to give some of our listeners a taste of baseball, as I know we're not used to not having baseball this time of year, so it's great to be with you today.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Last time we talked was Sunday, and we weren't clear, really, what was going to happen. When did you leave Arizona, and what's your baseball plan right now? Do you have one?
Well, you know, we have a tentative plan. I stayed in Arizona, you know, till Tuesday, and I wanted to stick around. You know, there was a lot of things in flux every day. We were getting different answers on whether we were going to be able to work out, whether the players were going to be able to use the facility. So a lot of the coaching staff stuck around to be available for the players. But as it turned out, you know, and the orders were to go home. We couldn't use the major league facility. It was going to be shut down. And as this thing progressed, everybody was, you know, looking at their families and being more concerned to get home where they can work out, take care of their families, and do the things they have to do. You know, we didn't know if there'd be more travel restrictions, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that's behind us. I've been home now for since Tuesday. And, you know, we're kind of planning for maybe mid-May to early June, the best-case scenario, to get started. So I've been on the phone with Cap and all the coaches. We've had some conference calls and Zoom. They got this app Zoom where you can all be in a conference, video conference. And we've been actually discussing a lot of things. So, you know, we're trying to stay ready for when baseball comes back and see what we can do now to make sure we're prepared.
Right. Terrific. Terrific. I didn't know all that was going on. Glad to hear it. That you're home safely and you and Lori are together. And as I said when I opened the show, this is something that we need the cooperation not just of Bay Area people, but Californians, all of the United States, and all the world, really, to contain this thing. So glad you're home safe and sound. You know, we talk about, you and I just mentioned it, River Islands. And I know people can't get out to visit River Islands right now, but everyone can do the next best thing, and that's visit the website, riverislands.com. That's riverislands.com. You can see 40 floor plans, easy for me to say, 40 floor plans for 12 different neighborhoods there, and maybe do a little dreaming about a community that just may be your perfect home. So, well, like with baseball, River Islands, you know, when it's all said and done, we'll get back to people coming out and seeing the homes and everything else. So I'm glad that we heard from Colleen, and she reinforced the fact the website is still up and running, and you can get your the beautiful homes and look at them right there on the website.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's great to know that website is there. I mean, the whole real estate industry, you know, Lori, my wife, obviously is in real estate, and you know, everything has changed for them as well. You know, they're not allowed to show homes with, you know, people aren't going into homes to look at them. So it's great that River Islands has that website where you can see all the amenities they have and everything they have to offer. You know, people are doing virtual tours now. Realtors are going in with, you know, with an iPad and showing properties with a virtual tour. So I'm sure if people are interested in River Islands, you can go to the website, contact somebody, and they can get you more information on those types of things, because it's not far from the Bay Area, and as you said, it's a great alternative to being right here in the city. It's not that far away.
Now, 40 floor plans for 12 different neighborhoods there. So, well, I'm glad that we mentioned that. And, you know, you always give a good touch as to what's reality in the Bay Area. And I'm glad you mentioned that about Lori and how she's handling her business right now. So here we are back with baseball. Bill Lasky there yet? Bill's going to join us.
Oh, great.
Yeah, they'll let me know when Bill is there. But, well, I want to talk a little bit. When Bill gets here, he'll jump in with us. A little bit of this, the Mariner game that they've been showing all week. I love the fact that Major League Baseball is going back into their archives and coming up with these great games. And I know 1995, it's a strike year. It's not a full season. But the thing that I forgot about the Mariners, they were 12.5 out in August and came back and tied the Angels. And Randy Johnson couldn't pitch the opening of the series. And then they end up facing the Yankees. And how about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was a heck of a story. It was, you know, the Yankees against the Mariners. Mariners had a great team. You mentioned Randy Johnson, and they had Ken Griffey Jr. You know, Joey Cora was on that team. Edgar Martinez, who you mentioned about the big hit. And, you know, I went back and looked at it as well. I saw the 79 series on MLB, but I didn't see the Mariners game. But I went on the internet because you piqued my interest. And I'm like you. I just love watching these classic games on TV, bringing us back and seeing the players and seeing how exciting the baseball was. But that Mariner game was something else, no doubt about it.
Bill Lasky joins us. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing good, Marty and Ron. Good to hear you both. I'm glad Ron is back home here in the Bay Area. Getting a little cooler weather here than in Arizona where you are, Marty. But good to hear you both today, and good to be back on radio talking Giants baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about what MLB has done this week, and Will and I were just talking about a game that's been on, and it's a fabulous story about the Mariners in 1995 and how they came back. But, Will, you know, I know you had a chance to see a little bit of that 11th inning. And
yeah.
Joey Cora, you know, the bunt single? How about that?
Yep.
He lays bunt down and then eludes Mattingly, one of the best fielders in first base history.
Well, that's what's so unique about this. You know, we talk about the book and playing the percentages, and people will tell you today, you know, you don't want – they were down by one, the Mariners, right, into the 11th inning, and Joey Cora leading off the inning, he bunts with one strike on him, and you don't teach that today. Oh, you never bunt with a strike on you. Well, he had to do that because Mattingly was playing him up earlier, and then he kind of went back – and he bunted the first, as you said, Mattingly, one of the best fielders in the game. You'd say, well, don't bunt it to him. And he places a perfect bunt, and he gets the first base, and that started the inning. And then Griffey comes up, hits the hard base hit past the diving second baseman. I mean, that very easily could have been a double play ball. It just shows you how fleeting winning can be. But it was just out of the reach of the second baseman. Now it's first and third. And here comes Edgar Martinez, one of the greatest hitters of all time, and certainly was one of their best hitters with Griffey on that club. And he hits a double down the left field line to tie the game, tie Cora from third. And really what made that inning for me was Ken Griffey's junior speed, because that ball got to the wall quick, and they pulled off a perfect relay. The Yankees did. But Griffey was motoring around them bases, and he scored easily to win that game. What an exciting finish after being down in the inning. So that was a great inning to watch. If you haven't seen it, you should look at it on the internet, and it's very exciting.
Bill, your thoughts about game?
Yeah, you know what I wanted to say is I'm with both of you guys watching some of those old video games. I mean, it's on TV, of course, MLB, not video, but at the same time, seeing some of the players that you just talked about, Ron, Ken Griffey Jr. being one, just so athletic, and you remember him, and I remember, so does Marty, about how great of a player he was, and he played along with some great players. Jay Buhner was on that team, and Edgar Martinez, and it goes on and on, but that was a great finish of a game. The 11th inning was so exciting, and of course, the Mariner fans were so loud, and I know, Ron, you played there, I played there, and the old Mariners, that dome, you could rock it. You couldn't even hear sitting next to each other. It was so loud.
Yeah, you're right, Bill. I mean, Marty, I'll just say this.
And, no, please.
To his point on how loud it is in the Kingdom. I mean, I've been there twice, and you wouldn't even be able to hear yourself think in that place. I can't imagine how exciting it was to be a Mariners fan in that moment in that Kingdom.
Well, think about this. Here's Sam Perlazzo, right, as a third base coach. And I remember Sammy when he got the Oriole managing job. Great baseball guy, right? You know Sam, right? Woe and Bill?
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. I know. I know the name. Yep.
Yeah. Terrific guy. Terrific. So, here it is. There's nobody out. And he's sending Griffey. Can you imagine how this guy's heart must have been pounding at that time?
Yeah, no kidding. You know, it's you know, you talk about, remember the World Series when people were saying in Kansas City that they should have sent Gordon, the third base coach there. But he had no chance. Crawford had the ball in his hand. But you're right. There was nobody out. The only saving grace for Perlazzo would have been that, you know, the ball Martinez hit, he would have been in scoring position. But I don't think he would have been at third base, you know, to score on a sac fly. But, you know, Palazzo made the right decision because it wasn't close at home plate. And, again, Griffey's speed, anybody else that doesn't run like the wind like him doesn't score on that ball. So that was a difference maker in that game.
Ron, let me ask you a question on that. With Edgar up at bat, a contact hitter, do you think he was getting a little better jump off that before the ball was even hit down the line? Do you think he had an opportunity to say, hey, he's going to make contact, I can get a little bigger lead or a bigger jump?
You know, I don't know. I mean, he was on first base, Griff was, when Martinez hit that ball. So you can't get too big of a jump, right? Because he can get picked off over there. So I just think the sheer speed, if you watch that play, I mean, the outfielder got to that ball quick, and they get that ball in quick. But, you know, he was mowing around those bases. So whatever he did, he did a heck of a job. And to score with nobody else, like Marty says, Palazzo sending him, you know, Palazzo knew he was going to be safe in that situation. Yeah.
Boy, well, thinking about you as a third base coach, well, what's the most nervous you've been sending a guy? Can you think in a big situation where you said, boy, all right, he made it, but boy, that was tight.
Yeah, I think every time I send somebody, I'm nervous. No, I think, you know, honestly, you know, the tougher situations is when you send somebody with nobody out. You know, like Palazzo did in such a big moment. If you send somebody with nobody out, he needs to be safe. And then the tough decisions come with one out because you don't want to hold a guy up. And maybe he doesn't score because the next batter pops up. But with two outs, it's a little bit easier as well because you're going to roll the dice and take a chance, you know, that they're not going to throw him out. So, you know, nobody out, don't screw up. One out are the tough decisions. And, you know, we haven't been in one of those must-win games yet in the playoffs, and that's where everything is ratcheted up. You know, a World Series, a playoff game, a must-win game. So I've been fortunate right now in the fact that I haven't had any of those real, real difficult calls in a playoff game.
How'd you feel when you saw Duffy take off against St. Louis?
Oh, I love one there, Marty.
Yeah, right, Bill. That's the RTI, runs thrown in. We had 16 of them in that playoff run, I think, that year.
Well, he saw it, and Duff's been on with me, and he said I don't know what I was doing, but I saw it, and I just kept going.
Yeah, good read. I mean, it was right in front of him, so he really didn't need the third base coach, right? The ball's at the backstop, and that's what you want, a player to use his instincts. And if he's got to wait for you to wave him or he hesitates at all, he probably doesn't score. But he knew right away, you know, and that he was going to score, and it was a big moment for us.
Let me ask you,
Ron,
guys.
I heard you.
Go ahead.
Marty, I just want to ask you. I heard Ron and you guys talking earlier that you're on, you know, a Skype-type with the coaches and things, and I wanted to ask you, there was a couple moves that went on this week with Sean Anderson and Steven Duggar. Can you talk a little bit about why they were optioned to AAA and maybe some of the thoughts and patterns of what the coaching staff thought of that?
Yeah, I wish I could give you more insight, but, you know, we were all home at the time when these moves were made. We weren't together as a group, so I didn't get a whole lot of insight into those moves. But, you know, obviously the rosters had to be adjusted because of what was going on, and they felt like that point in time that's you know, Farhan and Scott, that's the moves that we're going to make. You know, we're really in uncharted territory here with all this. And who knows, you know, maybe they come back to spring training if we get back together and still have an opportunity to make the team. Because if we do reassemble and we have some sort of spring training, it remains to be seen who's going to be invited. But I would think that, you know, those two players could still be recalled and still have an opportunity to make the team. I think more just a roster moves at this point in time, being in this break more than anything else.
Well, good point. Let me ask you guys this about Randy Johnson. Because to finish up this Mariner thing, Randy Johnson comes in. Of course, he couldn't pitch the opening game because he had to beat the Angels to get in to win the division, you know, that, and the playoff that he came back. But he comes in and gets out of trouble. They had to bring him in the ninth inning to get out of trouble, and he strikes everybody out. And then, of course, he's in there. He gives up a run to the Yankees, and then the great rally gets him off the hook. But Woe and Bill, Randy Johnson, you guys got to see a lot of him. Woe, you did. Obviously, he was a Giant. What was your take on Randy Johnson? Well, as an opponent and as a teammate, what did you think of him? And, Bill, I'll ask you kind of the same question.
Yeah, go ahead, Ron.
Okay. Well, you know, certainly I actually faced him when I was playing a long time ago. And, you know, so when you're in the batter's box and you're facing him, it looks like his arm is right on top of you. You know, I mean, there wasn't many pitchers where he's releasing the ball closer to home plate than most people because he's so tall and so long. And of course, he threw, you know, high 90s. So he was intimidating. He was very intimidating. And watching him on the other side, I know a lot of lefties, you know, the John Kruk incident, I think they had in the All-Star game. A lot of lefties didn't want to face him. He had that three-quarter angle, and he always had that scowl on his face. And he's one of those old-school pitchers where he didn't care if he hits you or not. So that makes him even more intimidating when you step in the batter's box. And the thing that surprised me is when he came over to us, you know, it was a little later in his career, and, you know, how good of a teammate he was at that point in time, because there was rumors about he was a little surly and he kept to himself and he wasn't the teammate you were looking for, just a tremendous talent. But I saw just the opposite when he came over to us. He wanted to help Tim Lincecum and Matt Cain, and he was available to these guys and wanted to talk baseball. So I have nothing but great admiration for him as a pitcher and a person for when he came over to play with the San Francisco Giants.
You know, I remember him when he first started with the Montreal Expos, because he was one of the top rookies coming up with Montreal. Didn't know where the ball was going, but he had that overpowering fastball, like you said, Ron, and a little breaking ball that every lefty cringed on. But the point that I remember about Randy Johnson is when he hit JT Snow in spring training. I'll never forget that moment talking to JT, you know, many years after that. It was just a grimacing point. You were there, Ron, when that happened. And,
He
was just that type of pitcher, Marty, like a Nolan Ryan from the right side or a J.R. Richard. When he threw it, most of the time you didn't know where it was going. He was throwing for speed instead of accuracy. And as Ron said, as tall as he was, his hand was probably – touching the grass in front of the mound when he released the ball. And the tall pitchers all had that. Ed Halicki, myself at times, you could use that as an advantage. But with that velocity, he was just command central. And, of course, a Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. He had this stuff, an electric stuff, when he was with Seattle, as well as he went with Arizona. Kurt Schilling and him were fabulous. And just the stories about him, I never faced him as a hitter, and I don't want to. I wouldn't even face him now. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He was just that overpowering pitcher that every hitter didn't want to go in there thinking they were going to go 2-for-2 or 3-for-3 off him. It just didn't happen.
Well, what was it like going up in the series against Arizona with Johnson and Schilling?
Yeah, it was tough. They were very tough. That 1-2 punch. You know, you have two number ones like that, and, you know, arguably the best pitchers in the league at that point in time. They were tough, but, you know, when we faced them, we had a pretty good lineup, too. We had Kent. We had Bonds. We had guys that weren't afraid of those guys. And, you know, one guy comes to mind is Sean Dunston. Sean loved hitting against Randy Johnson. You know, no one else wanted to be in there, but I think he had a lot of success against them. And, you know, it's the old thing. You know, when you have all-star and Hall of Fame type players on your roster, you know, they raised their game when they faced the best. And when we faced Schilling and we faced Johnson, it brought the best out in our guys. They were up for the competition, and we had some real good battles against those extremely tough pitchers.
Well, I think, if I'm not mistaken, today is Sean Dunston's birthday. I thought I saw
that. Is it really?
I swear, I thought I saw that somewhere today, and he got a huge hit. Mark A. Simon says, from Sports Info Solutions, the guru of shifts and all the other stuff, the defensive guru, does something about big Mets hits, and there's something about a big hit against the Mets or whatever that Dunston got for Mark Simon. It was a big deal. But I think it's his birthday. But, you know, well, we've never talked about Sean as a baseball player. We love him. I mean, the guy, I love talking ball with him. He's a Steeler fan. He challenges me all the time on questions. What was it like being around Dunston, Sean Dunston, as a player?
Yeah, well, I love him like a brother. I mean, we've coached together a long time, and we've enjoyed some success. And I think he's finally over losing to the Angels in 2002 after these last. But it took three World Series for him to quit bringing up 2002. But as a player, you know, Sean was the complete opposite of these guys today. You know, you watch these guys before a game today, and they go through all the handshakes, right? They all have a bit on the handshake, getting ready to be. They're exuding all this energy, and Sean was the complete opposite. He was a little bit like Ryan Vogelsong on the day he pitched, but Sean did this before he played. You know, he wouldn't eat. You know, he didn't want to have a big meal before the game, and he was serious. He kept his mouth quiet, and he had that game face on the whole game, and he gave you everything he had, right? Mm-hmm. The thing I love about him is, like Pete Rose, is he ran down the first base as hard as anybody in the game, just like Pete Rose did all the time. And I have the utmost respect for him, the way he played the game.
Well, I tell you what, I remember him so well when he was with the Cubs, number one pick overall. But when he played shortstop with a cannon of an arm he had, I mean, you'd be sitting in Wrigley Field down at the end of that dugout, and you were ducking because he threw the ball so hard, it didn't matter if it was in front of second base, right behind pitcher's mound. He was throwing pellets over to first base, cannon of an arm, double play master with Ryan Sandberg up the middle. I mean, those two had a real good career together. And at the same time, as a pitcher, he was a tough out. He'd go to right field on an inside out, and he can knuckle it up pretty well.
Yeah, today is his birthday, 57 years old today. He was with the Mets in 1999, so we'll find more about that later when Mark comes on. But in talking to him, I think he's just the best when it comes to baseball.
What is his new role now, Ron?
Well, Sean, I'm glad you asked. First of all, happy birthday if he's listening or any of his friends are listening. You know, he's going to be helping out Sacramento and San Jose. So when they're at home, he's going to be an extra coach. He's going to visit those clubs and give his expertise. He has so much to offer. So he'll be helping. He'll help the AAA team and the A-ball team out when they're at home.
Yeah, he said he loved hitting until they threw him a slider.
Truth. One year, I think he walked only 12 times in 500 at bats or something like that. So he didn't get cheated. That's for sure. He never got cheated.
I love him. I love him. Happy birthday, Sean Dunston. Hey, we'll take a break, Bill, and of course, Woe with us. We'll come back. Well, you know, they also showed a little of the 1979 World Series. The Pirates, we are family. Now, you are part of the Pirates, so I want to get your thoughts on some of the great players on the Pirates. You and I really haven't talked about that before. And then the other one is the World Series of 2010. There are some amazing moments in that World Series, and that was the first one. And nobody knew what was going to happen. Cliff Lee and Lincecum, no one knew. And Cliff Lee was the greatest World Series pitcher ever, playoff pitcher. And then things happen. So let's touch on both of those when we come back right after this.